Welcome everyone to another very special episode of Brainstorm Brewery here. You've never heard of me before, I'm probably sure that it's okay. It doesn't really bother me at all because I'm with some of the people that I love the most. You know, I feel welcome here, like I'm with my family. It's not friends, it's actually family here. You know, I'm Marcel, yeah. You know me as Marcel MTG. But we have this other guy here. He's a guest. I don't know why he's still a guest, but he's still a guest. We have Douglas Johnston.
Nobody knows why he's still a guest except
for
me.
I'm only a guest so that you and Corbin can make yourselves feel better about what you are.
Which is podcast member Ametrius?
Yeah. Like, I'm basically an official member of this cast. I just let you guys call me a guest because for your self-esteem purposes.
That's so nice of you.
You're welcome.
You're the best guest we have ever had.
So boosting self-esteem, Douglas Johnston is boosting Jason E. Ault. He is in the pits right now. He has nothing good going on with his life. You know, comedy isn't working out for him. Having a daughter has just, you know, ruined his free time. So Jason, I mean, why do you even come back every week? What's the point?
If it weren't for this podcast, I would probably blow my brains out.
Oh.
So
what are you drinking right now? Because obviously you got to drink your pains away. So I know you went to go get a beer. I grabbed something here right now. Some nice Stroop. Belgian red ale.
Oh, that sounds nice. I drink because I care. But I also drink so I could show off this handsome drinking glass. This is official Brainstorm Brewery merch. If you go to patreon.com/brainstormbrewery and subscribe at the $20 per month level, eventually I'll get around to sending you two of these handsome glasses that you can drink liquids out of.
Jason will get to shipping your glasses sooner than he remembered what level the glasses were being sent out at. We'll put it that way.
That was a very confusing sentence to people. I know what you're trying to say, but everyone's like, was this a riddle?
So how many glasses have you sent out?
Hundreds.
Do you still got more?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
So we have a second shipment. So what happened was, if you get the glass that looks like this and has a lot of coloration, that means you got the second edition. The first edition, I think, were a little hardier, but Marcel didn't like how the label looked, so he got into it with him. It was a pretty funny story. He showed me the email chains back and forth. He's like, all right, I gave him a bad Yelp review, and I went around to a bunch of other sites, and I was like, Jesus, they're threatening legal action.
Yeah.
And I was like, maybe I'll back off before they sue us. And I was like, wait, but I like their glasses better. Because on the second edition glasses, somebody washed it in the dishwasher and the label came off. So I don't really know what to do about that.
Yeah, see, the problem with the first glasses, they were like a trapezoid. So the way that their printing was, they couldn't do a square box and they didn't compensate for it. And I could have compensated. It was a back and forth and they did not want to accept blame. It got bad.
Marcel, we were angling for free glasses. I'm not gonna lie. We were angling for free glasses.
Well, yeah. I mean, it happens, but it wasn't. That's not the point. It's just a matter of like, I looked at it. It's like this is. If you try to put that in retail, it's not sellable. So I'm a little bit of a perfectionist, Marcel Mint. So they definitely weren't Marcel Mint. And then this next round of glasses, they look great, but you know they have
and the label comes off in the dishwasher.
Yeah,
so
that's unacceptable. You know, so with the
have
process,
your hand servant.
Yeah. I just hand wash it. I just rinse it out with beer and then drink beer. So
yeah.
We're not through the first edition glasses yet. So if you subscribe later, we'll have figured out a remedy.
Well, at least the second edition glasses are going to be more rare because the ones that do go in the dishwasher will be destroyed. So there may
that's
be
that's true. It's like all the people that played Iron Man Magic with Lotuses. Like all the Alpha Lotuses are torn up, and the unlimited ones. Everyone's like, wait, the card's worth $11. I'm not ripping that up. So, who knows, man? I mean, really, if you just want to give us $1 a month, you can have access to the Discord server and talk to some of us some of the time. It's a good time.
All right. So we.
I don't know. That's not
my
typical vigorous Patreon pitch. I don't know what's wrong with me. I'm not feeling it tonight.
You know, I hate your shilling, so that's the whole point.
It's not, you know what a shill is? A shill
I know,
but like
it's
somebody
like,
that, okay, you, that's fine.
I went over this because episode 200 is happening. So I'm going through all the clips and I'm listening. And I was like, oh man, I'm going to have this whole segment about Corbin the shill. And then as I started to compile the clips, there wasn't that many Corbin, you know, Corbin the Shield ones, but there was a lot of Jason the Shield. I mean, you shield for Brainstorm Brewery, but you just, you're relentless with the pitching. Like, you really needed to get in sales or something, because you just don't stop. You
fall right into that group. Someone has to do it.
I mean, I agree with you, but at the same time, it doesn't have to be done every episode.
It does.
No, it doesn't.
Man, wait till Blue Apron sponsors us.
Oh, my God. Whatever. I mean, because there's a point where oversaturization just people tune
That's
it out.
That's true. That's why I only do it once per episode.
Okay. Well, everyone, listen in. And if you don't want Jason to continue pitching,
if our Patreon hits $1,500, I won't do any Patreon pitches for 2 months. So go to patreon.com/brainstormbrewery and give us your money and say, hey, no more pitching, man. We get it. We're part of the team. We understand, and we understand it so much, we're going to give you this much money so that we never have to hear it again, because you won't have to pitch to us, because we will have already given you money saying that we don't want to be pitched to. And I'll be like, all right, I respect that.
All right, so then
I'll still do it, but it'll get cut out.
All right, we'll cut it out. But in the meantime, we got to give people some value, because it's expensive to listen to this and then not get anything out of it. So, Douglas, what do you have for us? What happened in the Magic world? Or do we want to jump into Breaking Ball? What do you want to do? Tell us.
I'm always ready.
Whoa, Marcel, we brought you on to drive the bus.
Nope, Breaking Ball. Breaking
don't
Ball.
Don't let the inmates run the asylum, Marcel. You gotta keep your pimp hands
too
dry.
Late.
I've been gone for so long. I forgot. I don't have show notes. I forgot the flow. I forgot how you guys said.
I sent you show notes.
We
I
sent
go
you
on
show
talking
notes
for hours.
How many times did Corbin say, "I sent you show notes," and then like no one cared?
Breaking Bolt time. Breaking Bolt time. Break.
Oh yeah, Breaking Bulk. There's so much good stuff.
It's a pick. Breaking Bulk. The end.
You know, I'm even ready with my Breaking Bulk pick.
Go ahead. All
right, well,
shoot.
Why don't you just do your Breaking Bulk pick since you love it so much?
I do. It is a black one instant. And it's a removal spell.
From what set?
That gives it away.
Is it the?
It's an uncommon.
Oh, okay.
It's a black one instant removal spell.
What's and the upside?
The first line of text is destroy target non-black creature, and then it has a keyword mechanic.
Yeah.
Proliferate,
is it?
Yeah, that one. The one that you use,
that one was
you double. The one that you doubled
it's,
up.
It's black one instant destroy target non-black creature, and then it has a keyword.
For black one, what you'd have to get something pretty negligible. Scry? No, Scry's too good on a 3-mana Doomblade. Man, this is tough, and it's an uncommon, you say?
Yep.
Boy, I'm bad at this tonight.
What if I told you the mechanic was gotcha?
Then I wouldn't know what the card is. So
exactly. It's a card called Kill Destroy, and it's from Unhinged.
Alright.
And it says,
destroy
target non-black creature. Whenever an opponent says kill or destroy, you may say gotcha. If you do, return kill destroy from your graveyard to your hand. The card bio is for like 25 cents on regular. Like anywhere from 10 to 25 cents. The reason I picked this is because Unstable is coming out in a week or two. And if you do have Unstable or Unhinged Bulk lying around, it is important to know which of those cards are bi-listable and which ones aren't. Because with a regular set, you can sort of separate picks into this is a casual card, this is a competitive card, this is a modern card, this is an EDH card. With Unhinged, it's all
it's
just
like,
casual
does this
stuff.
Go in an uncube or is this uncubable? Un-uncubable.
Right, but like there's still even more cards from that set that like aren't uncubable but are still worth picks. So like that's sort of why I'm bringing this up, is because it's important to like either go on to Card Kingdom's bio list or MTG Stocks bio list or MTG Stocks' page in general or TCG Player bio list. And if you have that like one row of Unhinged Bulk, we're like, I don't know what anything in here is worth, because like Is Little Girl worth money? Is Red Hot Hottie worth money? Is Kill Destroy worth money? Is, like, the squirrel cards worth money? Like,
yeah.
Some of these uncommons are worth picking out of bulk. Some of the rares are worth more than bulk. And it's just worth knowing which
and ones are worth. It's not even necessarily intuitive, so...
Right.
I treat uncards like I treat foils, and I just look everything up.
You know? And yeah, that's like a pain in the butt the first time you do it, but like once you start getting that unstable bulk and once you start memorizing prices, it's a lot easier to just like fan through a one row of unhinged, you know, the five or six cards you're looking for.
And the rest of it is just true poop. It sucks getting a whole stripe of that in a collection because it's like, oh, here's two 25-cent cards and a $3 rare, and then the rest of this is just hot trash. And you can't put it in an instant collection because, you know, people will complain. So, kindling? I don't know.
I mean, you can stockpile it and then eventually find that one person who says that they want to make an uncube or unconstructed or something like that. And, like, you can pawn it off to them.
Yeah, but they don't need 45 Elvish impersonators. That's the problem. They don't need to buy all my bulk.
No, if you get, like, a giant collection of, like, sorted unhinged cards, you're kind of out of luck. But, like, you can deal with a one row or, like, a three row of unhinged bulk relatively easily as long as you keep your markets open and, like, know who you're looking for. Like, you'll find the person who's like, give me $15 for this giant box of unhinged cards. You're like, done. So it's nice to know which cards to pick out of that before you do that.
That's fair. Yeah.
I got a backup if you want another one.
Why don't you pick a real card?
All right. This one is a white rare from Alliances. I'm not going easy on you guys tonight.
Scars of the Veteran.
Wrong.
No idea.
How many white rares were there in that set? Like four?
I don't know, but the card is like... it's like a $3... It's only available online for like $3 right now.
What's its mana cost?
It's one and a white. It's a one and a white rare white creature from Alliances.
One and a white?
Yep.
Wow, that probably makes it real obvious to...
And again, this is like a black border set before...
No, I get it, but I No,
I'm not blaming you. I'm just saying, like, this is a card that you will find in Alliance's bulk because people don't know what's rare and what isn't.
Yeah. Like, I get Varchild Warriders in bulk all the time.
Do you know what Sustaining Spirit does?
No, Sustaining Spirit isn't one in a white, though.
Yes, it is.
Oh, shit, that was going to be... Man, I shouldn't ask the mana cost because that was going to be my next guess. Yeah, Sustaining... It's a cumulative upkeep, which is great for Solemnity.
Yep, it's basically a worship on a creature, but it has cumulative upkeep. So
right.
It's in the same colors as Solemnity, so you can play your 2-mana 0/3 that prevents you from dying. And then
is a card I said would go up when Solemnity got printed, and it did.
Yep, but it just went completely under the radar because everyone was too busy buying Decree of Silence and whatever other cards people bought at that time. But yeah. You probably won't find this in bulk too often because you don't get Alliance's bulk very often. And the Alliance's bulk you do get is mostly commons and uncommons that has the Force of Wills and such picked out of it. But, I mean, like, I've found these in bulk before, and I've read the card, and I was like, that's neat. And then I pulled it out and sold it for 50 cents. This was a couple years ago before Solemnity was printed. But, I mean, nowadays it's even better. Fine, because the cheapest ones on TCG are, like, $4.
Yep, and it's just, yeah, like you said, it looks like a common or uncommon. You just look at it, it doesn't look flashy.
You're like, oh, cumulative upkeep, one away. Great, I'm going to pay a billion mana for this pass. Like,
hard pass. Some of that cumulative upkeep stuff is really brutal if you never plan on paying it. Like, they made some really good cards. They're like, oh, dude, Braid of Fire is going to be so cool. They're going to have a lot of mana, and then they'll have so much mana they won't know what to do with it all, and they'll get mana burnt to death. And nowadays, Braid of Fire is like, no, okay. Don't threaten me with a good time. So, yeah, some of that cumulative upkeep stuff, they made really good because the cumulative upkeep cost was so punishing. But now with Solemnity, you're like, nah, I think I will just keep my Glacial Crater around or Glacial Chasm around forever. So, yeah, Sustaining Spirit's a card we definitely identified when... Yeah, I got nothing else to say about it. Let's just drink.
Yep.
Marcel, what do you got?
I don't have any. I thought I had a pick, but it turned out it wasn't a pick.
It's fine. Right, if it's like could be a pick in the future, that's fine. That's fine.
No. It was it's a 6-cent pick. It's a land from Kaladesh. What could it be?
Sequestering Stash?
It's a common.
Common land from Kaladesh. Is it the, there weren't too many on, non-basics in Kaladesh. All I can think of is the Inventor's Fair.
No, is it the one that, is it the one that returns an artifact to the top of your deck or whatever?
No, it's actually going to be a trick because it came into, I believe, in the dual deck.
Oh, was it like the Stone Quarry or whatever?
Submerged Boneyard.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so it's like one of the ones that came in the Planeswalker deck, and then...
Yeah, so it's actually seeing a play in a blue-black deck. It's 18 cents in paper. On a buy list, you get for 6 cents. Online, though, it's $1.18, so...
That's not bad, though, because is that the only reason that card is standard legal?
I believe... No, I know that.
Because, it was probably from, like, the Tezzeret intro deck, right?
They got Amiket.
That card was in Oath of the Gatewatch previously... And then Battle Percenta card rotated, but if this is the only, like, Dimir Guildgate that's technically legal in Standard, you could actually have some people who need that card for Standard, and the supply on it is artificially low because it's the only printing of that card in Standard. So you can pick that card out of, like, Oath of the Gatewatch Bowl, and then still have people who want it at your store. So I like that as a pick.
Well, actually, in Amiket, they did the entire cycle. So the only reason why it is something is because it was from the Planeswalker set.
I see. So you can actually just pick them as, like, commons from Amiket, then?
Exactly.
Okay. That's still fine. I'll get a pass.
Cool.
There we go.
Nice. I got a card that has been printed 6 times and a 7th time as a special promo foil. But it's still... 50 cents, and it's still like 25 cents on a buy list. It is an artifact. And it has been printed in Arch Enemy, Commander 2014, Commander 2017, and in Modern Masters and a dual deck. Is that enough information?
Artifact with like a billion different ancillary products.
No, but listen, it's... it's a dual deck. I'll tell you it's Elspeth versus Tezzeret.
Yes, Everflowing Chalice.
See, I knew you'd get it with just that info. It's just one of those cards that just, like, it's been printed a ton, and it's still 50 cents, man. It's real good. I don't know how many more times they're going to print it, but look, they threw it in Modern Masters. They threw it in 2 Commander sets. It was in Arch Enemy. It was in dual decks. Like, that's a card you just put everywhere, and it just shrugs off those reprints. So it's not the fact that, like, this is a buy at 50 cents because it'll go up. It's just one of those cards you're going to get for a half a cent because it's in with bulk. So this is worth 100 times bulk. So those are worth knowing. Pick them out.
That and you play EDH a lot, too. Like, I play every 2-mana Rock and Gaunte because I always want to play him turn 3. And so, like, I'm not ever playing Everflowing Chalice for more than one. I'm not proliferating onto it unless I steal a Contagion Engine with a Gaunte, which is super fun to do. But, I just usually play Everflowing Chalice on 2. I don't even grab a die. I'm like, this is a Mind Stone, but they can't draw me cards. But, like, it just goes in a lot of decks.
Yeah, and if you draw it late and you just windmill it for 6 just to...
Yep, because it can cast the Gaunte steals...
Yeah, I like it for Paradox Engine shenanigans. If you can get this on 2 or 3, then it's pretty good. Chalice is fun.
So how many?
It's just one of those cards that's going to shrink, just shrug off reprints all day.
How much Mana Acceleration do you want in an EDH deck as percentage of your
deck? It really depends on what the deck is.
My Gaunte deck is pretty mana heavy, but I think I play like 37 or 38 lands, and I play like 10 mana rocks, but that's like counting Mana Crypt and Soul Ring. So I play, like, Mana Crypt, Soul Ring, Charcoal Diamond, Everflowing Chalice, Mind Stone.
You're in Commander Sphere?
I don't run any, like, 3-mana rocks unless it's Chromatic Lantern in a multicolor deck. I hate Commander Sphere.
I don't. I really like it. It's just awkward if it's in your opener.
Yeah, I just have this, like, personal grudge against 3-mana rocks that aren't, like, Chromatic Lantern. I run more Power Stone and Gaunte. I like that a lot.
Well,
they keep
giving us so many like good 2-mana rocks. It's like, yeah, Commander Sphere is so good, and then they're like, here's Thought Vessel, and you're like, ugh.
I play Felwar Stone, Prismatic Lens, and Gaunte.
Prismatic Lens, wow. You play Prismatic Lens over Commander Sphere. Well, I mean, if you're running out an Everflowing Chalice on 2,
And well, the other thing with the other thing with Prismatic Lens and Gonti is I play a lot of cards in Gonti that let me steal my opponent's cards, but actually require me to make the mana. So, like, I can play, like, Hedonist Trove of Praetor's Grasp or, like, Keridu Mind Eater or whatever, and those are... Gonti lets you cast things you steal with whatever mana, but sometimes I actually just need to, like, make blue or make red, and so Prismatic Lens lets you filter for that relatively easily.
Well, that's why Fel'War Stone's good, because if you're going to steal their cards, you...
Yeah. Fel'War Stone is, like, the best 2-mana rock that's not a Signet. I love it. Nobody plays it.
You know what? I feel like more people used to. I feel like when I first started EDH, Fel'War Stone was a staple. Now people are getting away from it, but like, I still like it.
Yeah, like 2-mana rocks that come in untapped are insane. So Ashnod's Altar. I'm actually looking at my deck list now. Ashnod's Altar, Everflowing Chalice, Fel'War Stone, Hedron Archive, Jet Medallion, Mana Crypt, Soul Ring, Mime Stone, Prismatic Lens, Thought Vessel, and Worn Power Stone are my mana rocks with 38 lands.
But that's a little atypical, right? Like you're running.
It's a little mana heavy. If you were like a normal quote unquote commander deck, I'd probably cut like two of those rocks, but not more than that.
I would say, like a deck like Shroom, that's even a little artifact heavy. You're probably gonna have Azorius, Dimir, and Orzhov Signet. You probably have Lantern. Maybe Darksteel Ingot. You'll probably have Gilded Lotus.
I hate Darksteel Ingot, too.
Mana Vault. I would rather... I don't know. But this is even an artifact-heavy deck.
So,
you know, you probably run, I would say, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, maybe 7 or 8 rocks in a mana-heavy deck, and maybe as few as 5 in something like Boros. But, like... You want a lot of those mana rocks to do double duty. They want to do something else. Like, you want Chromatic Lantern to smooth out your mana. You want something like Mind Stone to smooth out your draws. You want something like Thought Vessel to make sure you're not discarding to hand size. You know, stuff like that. It's not all just ramp. But sometimes it's about utility. So a lot of stuff does double duty.
So what do you think of the odds that... silver bordered cards will make their way into Commander now that we have this, the unstabled.
I think there's 0%. Room for. Well, I mean, there are going to be play groups that let you play certain silver bordered commanders, right? Like, there's like if somebody brings a Baron Von Count to my table, I'm not going to say no. Like, it's.
I don't think it's any more than it is happening now. I think the groups that were inclined to be cool with it were inclined to be cool with it already.
So what's hesitation towards it? Why is it banned?
Because it's the power level isn't your decks aren't. If you were playing Silver Border, everybody should be playing Silver Border. Otherwise, you're just like, oh, I have an infinite mana creature and I cast Chandra's Ignition on it, killed everybody. Wasn't that cool? And everyone's like, we just came to play EDH. What's this bullshit?
I don't know. Like, I think it's different if people just let the like if you build Baron Von Kaut within your 99 or Black Border, I think that's different.
I mean, yeah, probably. So,
or, like, if you build, like, the... What's the lady that was supposed to be Ludvec or whatever? She, like, mashes two creatures in the graveyard. Like,
yeah,
if you build
really
that
cool.
And you're like, I just want to put, like, Emrakul and a Squirrel, like, token together. Well, like, I don't know. I don't think most people will be putting insanely overpowered... Like, people aren't building Silver Border Commander to kill you on turn 5. They're doing it
but
to build their
still,
wonky stuff.
That's still the hesitation, though. People are like, I have no idea what kind of power level...
But I mean, how much is there to worry? Like, Commanders has so many stupid cards in it that are legal as is. It's that people complain about
that's
power
true.
Level. Like, what is this really going to add to the game that's going to, like, completely lopsided shit?
But people just aren't, they aren't ready for it. I think if everybody, if your playgroup, everybody has Silver Border cards, then it's fine. But you don't want to be the one asshole that sits down and be like, oh, I'm ready to.
Well, what I'm saying
know,
is, what if the guy.
Calculator on everybody.
What if it officially became, you know, say...
It won't.
Please, no.
It won't. Okay. It won't become official. And that's fine. If playgroups want to allow it, then playgroups should let everybody know that's a possibility. And I think Silver Border does have a spot in casual EDH. I think the best use of Silver Border cards is Cube, though. I think uncubes are fantastic. And just jamming, like, 5 uncards in a regular cube is still fine, too.
Yeah, I got Booster
but I just
Tutor
don't think...
and I got that.
Yeah,
one.
Well, yeah, and the new Booster Tutor, the 8-mana one that lets you put a whole pack of Legions and then die to a Phage. I love that. So,
or who, what, when, where, how? That one where it's like the 5 different colors.
Yep, Split that one's good.
They're fun, and EDH like Crowstorm, and Cube are supposed to be fun.
Yeah, like Crowstorm is going to be one of the few foils that's financially relevant for this set, and the foil Crowstorm token.
Yeah.
But as a whole, like if we can just sort of transition this a little bit into finance, like most of the uncards from the set won't be financially relevant at all. Like you're going to look at like this is going to be like Dragon's Maze without Voice of Resurgence, but it's only going to be held up by basic lands and tokens.
But that's fine because the basic lands and tokens are worth way more than the
on average, you can buy like vendor cost for this set is still the same as a regular set, so stores are still paying like 78. And if you average the price of a basic land to be like $2.50 or so, because planes are two, islands are four, or whatever, you're averaging about like $2.50 a booster pack, and then like you're getting 36 packs, so that's around $72. You're approximately getting like your cost back on a box anyway, just on a basic
land. No, just on the lands, now the foils.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
And then like,
it's nine sexy looking full art foils or full art tokens.
They did this on purpose. This was their entire intentions. They
wanted to make it so you wouldn't
get boned by buying this.
Hesitation behind buying the box. If the boxes are a break even or better, then you're like, then there's no reason not to do it. Then you'll have fun and buy the set.
Yeah, they want to make it so you don't, like, so your unhinged draft doesn't cost $100 and you have nothing left over.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's not, you're not just lighting a Benjamin on fire. This will be a real thing.
But, like,
I think a lot of the stores are going to do it that you just keep the land and token that's in your pack.
Yeah.
Just to keep some dude from, like, oh, I drop at the first round because my deck is 36 lands or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, they're definitely going to let you, like, keep the basic land and token after every pack you open because it basically reduces the cost of the draft by a few bucks or whatever, and that's fine. I'm just letting people know that there is no reason to spec on unhinged or unstable cards that aren't basic lands. Like, if you find cheap Crowstorm foils, fine. There's going to be, like, one or two cards. Like, Urza is $13 for some reason. I have no idea why. Sell that to anybody who pays you.
Richard Garfield is money. Foil little girls randomly.
I get, yeah, but, like, there's going to be, like, one, maybe two cards from this set that do that. Like, don't go specking on foil unstable commanders just because they're a dollar. Like, they're a dollar for a reason.
So what could cause these cards to become financially relevant? Where would you see a situation unfold where that would occur?
It wouldn't.
Right.
Because they would have to be adopted so broadly. Because for non-foil, I think the set's going to be pretty well printed. So you would need to see we already need to see really wide adoption of stuff for it to be financially relevant just on legal cards.
Yeah, this set isn't like restricted in terms of distribution. So if you're a store owner, you can talk to your distributor and say, I want 30, 40 boxes of unstable. They'll be like, sure, take them. Just get rid of, like, take them all. Versus, like, the From the Vaults or, like, other products like that. Like, I mean, Iconic Masters is, like, overprinted a lot nowadays, which we'll get to in a bit. But, like, for Modern Master sets previously, there was a cap on how much you could get. And that reduced how much supply was available, but that's not the case for Unstable at all. Vendors can get as much as they want. That's not to say that the print run is the same, because the primary problem that Unglued and Unhinged, first two, the primary problem those two ran into was the fact that they were printed to the volume of a normal set. So there's basically the same amount of Unhinged out there as there is for like Mirrodin or Darksteel or whatever the set was at the time. And so they are planning to fix that problem by predicting the demand and adjusting the amount of print run or the amount of printing that's out for Unstable, but they're not going to cap it artificially. They're testing their limits and they're knowing their limits, but you can still get as much as you want.
Yeah, see, that makes sense. I think one of the plus sides to Unstable is that a lot of the cars are designed in a way that it wouldn't, you know, really be that far-fetched to be black-bordered.
Yeah, for sure. And, I mean, that's another huge boon of this set, is that instead of going for, like, topsy-turvy or hand-over-head or, like, forcing you to do weird contortions to make your game playable, they're more of just using the set to explore design space, figure out what could be real, figure out what they could use in future sets. And that's really cool because it gives them some breathing room to not screw over standard, to not make modern horrible, to not ruin a commander product. And they're basically just, like, getting to they're opening up the entire set to like beta playtesters of like millions and millions of players, and just saying like, hey, test this, see if it works for us, because we might make Last Strike a real thing. We might make that like Calculatron, like we might make weird cards that break the rules, because we've seen that before, and we've had Unhinged and Unglued be precursors for real set mechanics. Like, Meld was originally the BFM, or Big Furry Monster, whatever. Like, that was the precursor to Meld. And Meld was a really cool mechanic from Eldritch Moon. There was another one, but I don't remember what it is.
It was the fast squirrel, or the slug that was, like, split second.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Oh, rocket-powered slug that he had to pay its mana cost the turn after you played it.
Was that, like, Suspend or something like that? The precursor to...
Or like the was that the Slaughter's Pact, the packs?
Yeah. Like the Super Nova Hyper Slug or whatever was the precursor to the packs, where you pay for the cost later. Yeah.
And Cheese Stands Alone was what was that one card that?
Baron Glory.
Yeah, I like Baron Glory.
So yeah, like they've used Silver Border sets to explore design space for Magic, and that's awesome. But like, from a financial perspective, don't go like buying up boxes at 80 or 90 or whatever, thinking that the basic lands are going to triple in a year, because they're not. Like, full art lands, they've been done to death while these do... While they made these unique and that they don't have borders, I don't think this sets them at a premium, and I don't think that this makes them catch up to Unhinged lands anytime soon. It's not like they're going to overtake Unhinged lands. It's not like a whole bunch of players are going to suddenly swarm and, like, rip open their basics or, like, get rid of their current basics to use these. They're going to be like $2 or $3, and that's fine. Like, that's fine. They're going to be that for a while.
They're just at the price point where you're a break even on a box, which encourages you to play. And then any foil land you get is gravy. Like, the first thing I ever did financially relevant was back in 2006, where I was buying $70 Unhinged boxes on eBay and just busting them.
So do you think...
Just flipping those lands, and then any foil I got was gravy, and I built a whole Legacy deck doing that.
So do you think people or vendors are going to eat more dicks with Iconic Masters boxes than they are going to with Unstable boxes?
Yeah, for sure, because they didn't realize that Walmart and Target were getting so many packs. Yeah. There's a lot more IM than anybody thought.
I mean, I don't think that they actively lose. I mean, I'm a very small-time vendor. I'm, like, one of the lowest terms of, like, what you can even call a vendor, but, like, I don't think that they actively lose money in terms of, like, buying the product and being able to flip it, but they definitely don't make as much as they would have if they had treated this as a normal Master set. So, like, vendors make X on Modern Masters 2015, Modern Masters 2017. This set's definitely a lot different because you're seeing boxes move on eBay at, like, 160 consistently, where vendor cost is, like, 138 or 140, like... You're just seeing vendors like, I have so much of this, I want to get rid of it as soon as possible, instead of just being like, I'll hold on to it for 6 months, it'll be worth more, whatever. Like, more vendors are looking to just get rid of it as soon as possible and make that quick buck. And that's adding a lot more product into the market.
Yeah, I don't know. Iconic Masters is a set where a lot of the value is more spread out than normal, so I think the packs are going to be better long-term than a pack of something in a top-heavy set, like Conspiracy. Take the Crown, for example.
Yeah. Speaking of Conspiracy, minor off-tangent, but if you were on eBay recently and you got one of those coupons, it's like, hey, you can get $15 off if you spend $75 or more, because those have been popping up every few weeks. Buy a box of Conspiracy 1. Not two. But buy a box of Conspiracy 1, because the EV on that set is like 90-ish, low 90s.
That's a $60 box with that coupon.
I mean, you don't really find them for $75 or $15. You get them for like $90 and then get them for like $75 or whatever. But getting a $75 box of Conspiracy 1 is good. And then you can
Isn't
either
there something that's stacky with that 15% off or $15 off coupon?
Maybe. I don't know. I don't think so. You can use eBay bucks with it.
Yeah.
If you buy a lot on eBay and you accumulate eBay bucks, you can conjoin those with that coupon, which is what I've done once or twice to get like $65 box of Conspiracy. But like every time one of those coupons shows up, I just buy a box of Conspiracy. I either crack it if I need singles, or I just sell it locally for like $85.90 to somebody who wants to draft. It's just a quick buck to be made.
It's a great set to draft. My LGS is slowly running out. He accidentally ordered 10 times as much Conspiracy 2 as he wanted.
Oof.
And, yep. An errant one on a form because he's a Luddite. He still, like, faxes in. I don't know how much of a Luddite you are faxing, but he's like, I don't understand the computers. I'm like, Jesus, Steve, just... But, so he ordered, like, way too much. So he does it every once in a while. He ordered a bunch of these Captain America figurines, and they were eBaying for, like, $60, and he's like, I'll give them to you for $20. I'm like, thank you for over-ordering. So every once in a while, some shit happens. So people have been sitting on Conspiracy 2, but it's moving. So even Conspiracy 2 is not that bad.
Conspiracy 2 is not great.
Yeah, but there's good cards in there, and nobody's...
Sure, I'm just... Like,
the problem is it's so top-heavy. Well, the EV... Yeah, and that's largely predicated on that box might have a Leovold in it.
Yeah.
So, given that Conspiracy and Stable kind of occupy the same space, I expect them to be on a rotation of some level. I mean, but I don't see an
unset. I don't think they'll ever do another unset.
You don't think they'll do another
unset? Yeah, we're not getting another unset for like 15 years. It's going to be like Mark Rosewater's daughter's like...
I don't think it's going to be that bad. I think we can see it.
It feels like a completed block, and it feels like Morrow's been trying to do this for 10 years, and they finally let him.
And they're like, we'll never get another one.
It just feels final, because Morrow wanted to do Cold Snap, too. He's like, you got to close the block off. Okay. The block's finished, and I feel like this block is finished. Just four sets doesn't... I don't know.
Four sets is not a block. I mean, I would say that this would be a success... more so than Conspiracy, and because of such that, you know, they chase that dragon, so I could see them doing another unset just because that, you know, I think they knocked this one out the ballpark because...
But if they do it more, I don't know. I think people are ready for this set because they've waited for it for so long.
Yeah.
If they do another one in 2 years, people are going to be like, ugh.
Yeah,
did
I agree.
Did we just do this?
I think
we just
I think
have a whole waste of a. Ugh.
Yeah, this I think is they could do also three, this is like four, a decade's worth of design days. Space saved up. Like they've stated multiple times that Rosewater like had these sheets. He's like, here, print this. I made it already. It's great. And they've been saying that he had this ready for so long. So that all of these cards are like 10 years of his like brainchilds and like different ideas he's had.
Oh,
and
the contraptions, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, like he's. Like they're not going to create this much new design space over the course of 2 years. They're not just going to like fart it out.
Or they would have really talented designers working on a silver bordered bullshit set.
Yeah.
They're not going to do that.
You got a point there because they already have an errata before the set's released because they have a, what is it, an infinite combo?
An infinite
combo with one of the augment cards.
So, yeah, I mean, you got a point there. This is probably just not given too much time. But, you know, again, I believe Wizards is all about the money. Not all about the money, but they're definitely about the cash. And when it comes to that, if Unset does well, they are not going to just shelve it. I don't think that's something that could happen.
I think Magic players are going to have to get used to the fact that Wizards no longer thinks everything's for everybody.
Yeah. And I think
they're like, oh, there's so how's my wallet going to take Conspiracy and Unhinged and Commander 2017 and Iconic Masters and Modern Masters 2017 and... Raiders of Ixalan and all this crap, and I'm like, don't buy all of it. Pick what you want. Who's buying Iconic Masters and I don't know. It's
I think it's good for most Magic players.
But at the same time, just pick what you want. Not everything's for everybody. You don't have to. I'm not buying Iconic Masters except to restock my case. I'm not buying any personal Iconic Masters. You know? I'm an EDH player, I don't care. So
I think every Magic player for their own mental health needs to understand that, you know, not everything is for you. And you got to find your lane and stick in that. Otherwise, you know, you don't have a job and you could just spend all your money on whatever it is. Or, you know, or you figure out what part of Magic is for you. Stay in that lane and you'll be happy with
it. Yeah, just find what you enjoy. Like, I know a lot of people who say, I want to build a deck for every format. They're like, I got my standard deck. Got my modern deck, got my legacy deck, got my commander deck, got my pauper deck, got my time leaders deck. And it's like, dude, how, like, how many of those are you playing? Like, how many of those on an average day-to-day, week-to-week basis are you going to use? And, like, these people will build all these decks, and then 3 months later, they'll be like, I don't play legacy, I don't play EDH, I'll sell these ones to you. Like, it's...
So I think you're not going to buy more stuff than you bought in 2016. But there will be more people that have enough stuff that they want. I feel like this stuff is going to get increasingly tailored to people, and I think that's okay. You don't have to worry about saturation. You can just be a little bit more, you know, a little bit more selective, and I think it's fine. But that said, if we have a few more years like this where we have like 27 products in a 5-month period, maybe I'll change my tune a little bit.
This is true.
So if we have a third and fourth quarter of 2018 and 2019 that were like this year, I might change my mind. Spread it out a little bit. You don't need 3 master sets within 3 months.
Yeah, I think it was just the timing of everything, and they would just try to force it. The Hascom was probably pushed upon them, and that kind of forced Iconic Masters at the wrong time.
Yeah. It's not WizCon, is it? It's Hascom.
Yeah, they're like, hey.
Hascom's like, yeah, we want to show our new Angry Birds games. Kids are crazy about Angry Birds. Can you have a magic set ready for the Hascom? They're like, why are you doing that voice? You're from Wisconsin. I know you don't talk like that. Second of all, no.
And they're like, oh, the magic sets sell good, all these master sets. Yeah, we're going to be doing one of those, a special one. That's going to be iconic.
Iconic Masters was a, screw it, here's an excuse to print these cards, Masters. And you know what? Fine, good. Give people the reprints they need. Not the reprints they want, but the reprints they need. Make Modern an okay format. The thing about being vague on your Masters, man, I don't care what you call the set. Call it FTV. This is an expensive Modern card plus a bunch of stuff people want in foil for EDH. Have an FTV called that. I don't care. You know? The Explorers of Ixalan thing is stupid, but it's going to bring the price of some cards down. Like, I like them coming up with novel ways that are really thinly veiled excuses to reprint certain cards. I'm fine with it. So, if Iconic Masters doesn't have to hang with another set, doesn't have to be part of a block. It's like, look, we're not going to screw up Standard by putting Death Shadow in Standard. So we found a way to reprint it. It's, God, can you imagine if they didn't have Master sets? So you know what? Do 3 of them. They don't all have to, they can be different. And once they all hit Modern at the same time, there will be a period of like 6 months where Modern is what they wanted. Right? What they wanted with Modern was hey, don't sell your cards after Standard rotation. Keep your cards and then buy some other stuff for like a couple $100 and now you have a Modern deck. That's what they wanted. So I think these sets kind of make it so if you miss the boat and weren't playing in Future Sight, you don't have to cough up $500 for 4 Goyfs. You know. You cough up $300 or like $250 maybe. And then you're in better shape. And I don't know. As much as it's too much, I think it's going to all hit Modern at once, and then everybody like, whoa, all my Modern stuff's on fire. But what that is accessibility. That's what they're going for, and hopefully they won't have to crank out 3 master sets a year.
So I heard that Walmart and Target are getting these special packs.
They're getting all kinds of special packs.
In addition
to the stuff that, like, well, there's the repacks that, like, whatever, who does the Target distribution, which is, like, a third party.
Mm-hmm.
They do the, like, hey, we put a bunch of just decks in these little plastic boxes and, like, threw a spin down in there and, like, a promo, and then that's $20. Some of those are good, some of those are not. Sometimes, like, hey, here's EDH decks, but all around me, it's like, hey, here's Planeswalker packs or whatever. In addition to that, they're also getting stuff from Wizards that is hurting some retailers' feelings.
Yeah. So what's this one where you get one? Is it one pack from the recent Standard sets? I think it's 5 packs, and then you get a special Eternal or something from Modern, a Modern pack. I don't know how that's going to play out. Does this mean that they're going to be reprinting some older sets? Because it seems like there's going to have to be.
No,
myriad
of
packs in there.
No, there's no way they're just like taking out old sheets and like printing them again. It's just probably just stuff from backstock, if that.
Okay.
It's probably just
like
just,
I've seen those in Walmart before the past few years. It's nothing new. There's like that one three booster pack thing in a blister pack where it's like, here's an Odyssey pack, a Scourge pack, and a Theros pack for
and a bristling Hydra.
Okay.
It's not anything new. It's just like random garbage they have in, like on the floor of the back closet.
They're like, let's clear it out here. Let's get some sucker to buy it.
Yeah, they're not reprinting. They're just getting rid of old crap. And, like, who better than Target Walmart people to dump it on? Because that's where your grandma goes. Is like, I know you play those magical cards. And you're like, oh, cool. Thanks for giving me a Theros booster. But, like, occasionally you'll crack decent stuff. And it's better than when Graham bought you a deck builder's toolkit 3 years in a row, right? So, like, give her some credit. All right. plus my brother-in-law had a Target discount forever, so I was getting EDH decks every Christmas, so that was cool.
All right. I got an email. I got 2 emails, actually. All
right, cool.
We actually had people send us emails in, like, the 30-minute window where I posted on Twitter and said, if you send us emails, then I'll have a chance to
read them. It wasn't just Twitter, Douglas. You also made a message in the Discord server that you can access if you give us $1 a month by going to patreon.com/brainstormbrewery.
You said once this episode, you said you were done. No more. You lied. You lied, Jason. Shame. Shame.
I knew it would upset you.
All right. This email is from Chris and is titled Haggling. Hey, Brew Crew, I'm a $10 patron, and I feel like DJ is always hassling us for emails. I'm just trying to get you value. You pay for this.
Yeah, why would you not send us emails all the time?
We are contractually no, we're not contractually, but we are professionally obligated to answer your email if you are a $10-plus patron. So get your money's worth. Anyway, I'm curious about how to haggle with personal sellers, or if you should. For example, if the seller tells me they want 58 for a car, but I want to spend 55, is it rude to ask for the $55 price? What about when I'm buying a playset? Is it more acceptable to ask for a few bucks off if the asking price off the asking price when buying in larger volume? Thanks, Chris. Sent from my Macintosh Apple.
I don't know if it's rude or not.
It's rude if you ask for something on every price, every single price. Yeah.
Nope, I don't. Hey, you know what? Marcel, you got your Marcel Mint thing.
Mm-hmm.
I ask on every price. I ask for more money when I'm buy listing, and I ask for less money when I'm buying. Sometimes they say yes, sometimes they say no.
Yeah.
You gotta pick your battles, I think.
So here's my perspective on this as somebody who has, number one, bought cards at a GP and sold cards at a GP, and number two, who sells a lot of cards on Twitter and basically gives people prices, like, when they're like, what's the price on that? I'm like, here's the price. Okay, so as somebody who buys cards at a GP, like, behind a booth, I don't care what you ask for. Like, I have a number that I'm allowed to give you, and I don't feel there's no, like, emotional attachment to, like, whether or not you ask for more money. I can either do it or I can't. If I can't, I'm not, like, I'm not mad at you for asking. Like, if there's a card in the case at $60 and you're like, hey, can you do 55? I'm like, no, sorry, man. But, like, I'm not mad at you for it. I don't think you're a horrible person. I don't hold any personal grudge against you. I don't think you're a scumbag. It's just, we can't do that number. This is a business transaction. I think that emotional feeling changes if you start to ask on a lot of cards, and you're being very nitpicky about small amounts of dollars. Like, if, like, let's say we have a really good deal on a Tropical Island in the case, and it's like $10 off retail, and you're like, can you do 5 more on that? It's like, no, this is already a good price. And you're like, okay, that's fine, you pick it up. And then you see another card in the case, it's $10 below retail. And you're like, well, can you do $5? And that starts to get a bit of annoying. Deals can be made a lot easier when it is hundreds and thousands of dollars. So, like, if your total in your cart at a GP is, like, $1,020, you're like, here's 10 Benjamins. Most vendors are going to be like, yeah, sure, that's fine. If they're not, they're doing business wrong. But, like, and as for somebody who sells cards on Twitter, I think it's a pretty similar situation where, like, a lot of the time I'll just go 10% below whatever the current TCG price is. So, like, right now, the low on Aether Vial for Iconic Masters is, like, 33. I sell them at 30. And if somebody asks, like, can you do 25? I'm not upset. I'm not, like, mad at the person for asking for a better deal, because why wouldn't you? There's, like, no discourse. There's no, like, negative downside to it other than, like, maybe annoying me. But I'm telling you right now that I'm not going to be annoyed. So, like, I'll just say, no, I can't. And then you'll either come back to me or you won't. It's not, like, a big deal.
If you got to read the situation, if they're no, those are our numbers, it's already 10% below TCG mid, I'm not going to move on anything, then you don't ask again.
Right.
But if they're like, yeah, you know what, whatever,
sure.
Then you can start to ask on a few things.
Yeah, it does start to get a little bit more annoying if my numbers are already pretty good, and I know that you probably won't find a better number elsewhere, and then you ask for multiple discounts on top of each other, like, there have been times where I have agreed on numbers, like, going down a little bit, like, can you do 7 instead of 8? Sure. Can you do 9 instead of 10? Sure. And I give those people those discounts, and then we total up everything, and then you ask for a discount on top of that. I think that's a little rude. Like,
yeah.
I've had that happen where people have, like, asked for those $1 or $2 discounts, and then the total ends up being $103, and they're like, can you do $100? I'm like, no. Like, let's stop that there.
It's already not $110.
Also, yeah. Another thing is, one thing not to do in haggling, that it's just personal pet peeve of mine, is don't just say, like, oh, it's only a few dollars, can you go a bit lower? Because, like, with that same logic, it's only a few dollars, can't you just keep it at the same number?
Yeah.
Those are my personal experiences.
Here's where I will do it a lot. If the number I'm asking for is the number at another booth.
Yeah, that's fair.
You asking are saving to match me is a fine. Lot. Yeah, it's like, yeah. So I will mostly ask them to match. And if they will, great. If not, I'll go take a walk. But for the most part, like, I'm going to buy it for $7 today. Might as well be with you because there's already 400 yeah. bucks on of stuff on the case. Let's make a deal.
And, like, some vendors, again, for a GP purpose, some vendors can't do that. Like, let's say that, like, random vendor in the back room has that one card for $7. But, like, let's just say you're dealing with Channel Fireball and they have the best room, the best spot in the house. And, like, people are going up to them and paying 10, like, hands down, no questions asked. But, like, maybe they can't say 7 on that because they're selling them all immediately because they have an awesome spot in the room. But, again, nobody at Channel Fireball is going to think you're a dick just for asking on one or two cards.
Yeah, but if you're like, hey, how about give me $5 off on Snapcaster Mages? Like, dude, they're going to sell 35 Snapcaster Mages this weekend. Yeah. If you're like, hey, will you take 75 instead of 80 on Rasputin Dreamweaver? Chances yeah. are you're the only person all weekend.
Yeah.
So also pick your targets. Don't pick stuff that they don't need you. But the stuff that's like, here's a German black-bordered Chronicles Soul Ring. Will you come down $3 on it? Yeah, you're the only person that even noticed that card all weekend. So
That's a good point.
So the stuff that, like, is probably not going to sell fast and they would just as soon not take it back.
You can tell pretty much every vendor, like, which case is this is our hot standard stuff and this is the stuff we expect to have a high velocity. And then there's the, please, we don't want to fly back with this case. Like, ask on that stuff more often. But again, like, none of these answers are concrete, none of it's rock solid. If you're picking up an entire standard deck from Channel Fireball and it's like $555 and you're like, hey, can you do $550? I'm buying an entire standard deck here. They'll probably say sure.
It's a skill also.
Yeah. Like, it is an acquired ability.
This is something we've been doing for years and I have more practice than most people just because I don't care. You know, so I do it more. But, like, it's something I've picked up over 6-7 years. So it's a skill you need to hone, but just, like, use your common sense, you know, and get a feel for the situation. But, like, just going up to Channel Fireball, like, oh, Snapcaster's 25, I'll give you 20. Like, or, I mean, that's not the price on Snapcaster, is it? But you know what I mean. Yeah, like, stuff that's moving quickly, you know, you don't want to mess around on that kind of stuff, but... if they tell you once they can't do anything, then they can't do anything.
Yeah, like sometimes...
Right, next email, come on.
If you think you're being rude, you probably are, right?
Yeah, this is something we could talk a lot more on, but Marcel is...
No, I mean, you guys...
said moron.
Oh, great.
No, I agree with Marcel. I totally agree with Marcel. We've done this email to death. I'm just saying, like, we could probably go on for another 20 minutes, but we definitely shouldn't.
Agreed. I think you guys hit several great points, and I think people.
No, I like to sometimes summarize the important points, and Marcel's like, "You're repeating yourself. You're talking in circles.
You're doing
like,
the Corbin without Corbin here. I know when it's time."
from Cody Johnson, Playmat Finance for the cast. Hello, Jason, Corbin, and guest DJ. Corbin's not here this week. Don't pretend he is. It's not a good thing.
You should know that, Cody.
Yeah, don't act like Corbin's a person. I've never sent an email before, but I figured I might as well because you just asked.
To anybody? This is your first email? Nice.
I managed to score one of the iconic Masters Ancestral Visions playmats from John Avon's Kickstarter. Nice. There were only 500 made. I want to sell mine, but this is such an exclusive product, I really don't know how much to ask. Playmat Finance is kind of niche, Anyway, thanks for being the best Magic podcast. Cody, set from my Note 8 on the Verizon 4G LTE mobile network. Playmat Finance is tricky because there's only one or two real baselines that you can go by. The first is like eBay completed listings, and the second is checking the high-end Facebook groups to see if other people are listing the same item you are. I would expect that once these playmats come in, you'd start to see a few of them, of people trying to take advantage of the same situation you are. And I would just sort of like keep a saved search on eBay of this playmat, see if any are popping up. Like, I have no idea what this playmat's going to be worth. It's something that's incredibly hard to judge.
Did you ask us so we would give you a number, or did you ask us so we would tell you how you could figure it out? Because I feel like if you're like, you guys are the best podcast, it's a lot of pressure. It's like, tell me a number. I don't know. What'd you pay? Double it. I don't know.
I'm going to guess 100. I'm going to guess 100.
They're 500 ever. They're pretty dope. Didn't he sign them?
Yeah, unless you specifically ask for it not to be signed, all of them are signed.
Nice. So,
I mean, 100.
Are you in a hurry? Yeah. Why? You know, the second mouse gets the cheese, right? This is one of those. This is not an early bird gets the worm situation. This is a second mouse gets the cheese situation. You're gonna let somebody else be the like, I don't know, 80, and then you'll be the guy that's like got some data to work with. I think you wait a little bit and let everybody else, you know, undersell them.
I wouldn't wait too long though, because you don't want the hype to disappear. You still want to be selling it while other people are like, oh shit, I missed out on that, and then buying it. But you don't want to like throw it in your closet for your year and be like, hey, remember this when like 8 other playmats have been printed since then that are also pretty cool.
Oh yeah, yeah. You're not gonna sell this in 3 years. I'm saying you might wait 3 days.
Yeah. Thank you, Cody.
I got some stuff that I definitely waited too long on.
I've got a pile of freaking Kaladesh cards that I waited too long on for buylisting.
Buylisting, same.
I wanted to get like 35 cents on Servant of the Conduit. It's like nickels on Cathartic Reunions and like quarters on Ceremonious Redemption. Freaking like 45 cents on the Harness Lightning, and I just waited 3 weeks and now it's all garbage.
Yep.
Unfortunate.
Fail a dash.
What that happened for me there. With what was that card that we bought that went up? Dead Bridge Chant. That happened to me. I was like, oh, I could hold on to that.
In and out. Well, we thought it would be a real card because we read it. And we're like, oh, this card's stupid.
No, we were mostly invested because we made the call and it actually took off. So we're like, yeah, this is the shit. We're going to make this card. This is going to be it. And it was cool.
Still a good card.
Yeah.
I play it in ADH.
It's a good card. I still got. I think I got like 12 of them left in my box of shame.
You still own them?
Yeah.
Hey,
I mean,
my box of shame has 150 Master of the Pearl Trident that I didn't. Because I sold enough to buy list when it went up to 5 to break even, and then I sold a bunch
of
5 retail, and then yeah, it was set on too many.
Let's find out what's in my box of shame. Oh, Jesus.
Oh, you know what was in my box of shame for the longest time? I bought a bunch of Black Border Tron, and now it's finally back over 10.
I know, holy shit. I'm glad I just finally got my play set, one of each.
I have Beck and Call in here, Trade Routes, Punishing Fire, Skill Borrower.
Beck and Call is still good, I think.
Seance, River Kelpie, Retether, Necrotic Ooze. Bizarre Trader,
nice.
That card.
I have a bunch of Niv-Magus Elementals in my box of shame.
All right, so let's move on to picks of the week.
Pick of the week. Pick of the week. Pick of the week. Time for the pick of the week.
Ah, shoot. We're doing that? All right.
Pick of the week.
All right.
I had DJ look this one up on the spreadsheet to make sure I haven't called it recently, and I haven't. You can still get Eldrazi Displacer under $3. That's not correct. That card's very good. It's in almost 5,000 EDH decks. It's going to be in more. It's hard to reprint, and it's... it's like a better Deadeye Navigator in some situations, because you can like remove their creatures from attacking you and stuff and tap them. So there's some stuff that doesn't have blue in it that wants access to Eldrazi Displacer. And you can always pair this up with Rasputin Dreamweaver. So, or Hez is on Tamar, I guess, and those are both $80 cards.
I love Displacer.
So
the card is nuts.
It's nutty. So get them under $3. This is a $5 card easy.
In due time, it's just a matter of time before it hits. And I don't, it doesn't seem like the type of card is going to be easily reprinted.
It seems really clunky to reprint, yeah, because the true colorless in that. Plus, it's being devoid. I don't know.
It does seem like one of those things where when they reprint Devoid, they will reprint it en masse in a master set as a theme. So, like, if you start seeing a master set that's like, hey guys, the first card spoiled is like Eldrazi Temple, you're like, I want out of these.
Yeah.
It makes a lot of sense.
But they're still under $3. And I went on a shop crawl when I was visiting my wife's family. And I went to a bunch of different places and they all had them for nothing. So that's a card I'm picking up in person in cash. I'm putting my money where my mouth is on Eldrazi Displacer. And I might as well tell people about it, because sometimes I buy that stuff in secret. I'm like, man, I'm going to buy every Loalan Cephalid Empress I see, and then that just never does anything. I'm like, oh boy. That's embarrassing.
If you fail, you want people to see it.
Yeah, well, if I succeed, I definitely want people to see it. So I think Eldrazi Displacer is a slam dunk. It's a $5, $6, $7 card just waiting to happen.
I've got two blue cards for you this week. I had two Breaking Bulks. I'm bringing two picks of the week just because...
There's no Corbin.
Yeah, just because there's no Corbin. And you'd rather have two of my picks than one of mine and one of his anyway. So my first pick of the week is Cheaty Face, which is a 2 blue and a 1 unhinged card. It's a 2/2 flyer. And if your opponent doesn't catch you putting it into play, then you can play it for free. Card spawns a lot of arguments. It's one of the only uncommons from Unhinged that is worth more than a couple bucks. But, I mean, you're probably not going to find these in bulk because most of them are already picked out. But it's just one of those cards that has recently moved a little bit thanks to the unstable set. And it's just another one you want to keep an eye on. Like, if you're somebody who's interested in, like, playing with this unconstructed cards, or you have a play group that's okay with you using them, just pick up a Cheaty Face or two, because they're probably going to get more expensive than they will cheaper. And my second pick of the week is Kindred Discovery from Commander 2017. This is a super powerful blue enchantment that came out and immediately jumped to $15, because it lets you trigger on every single enter the battlefield and every single attack for every single creature. But the second wave of Commander 2017 decks hit around mid-October and crushed a lot of the prices. So, like, a lot of things dropped a lot pretty far. Kess, Herald's Horn went down from, like, 7 to 5-ish, 455. And Kindred Discovery just took one of the hardest hits. I don't know if it was just originally due to hype, but it's down to like 750 now, which seems like a pretty good buy-in because the supply is super high right now. So, while Kindred Discovery also, or while this pick also counts for the rest of Commander 2017 cards, like, just get them now if you need them, like Kess, like Ur-Dragon, like, this is the cheapest they're going to be for the next several months. But Kindred Discovery is one that just, like, went up really high, and now it's really low.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
All right, so I'm going to say, I'm going to try to do some standard picks.
Woo. Oh, so you're going to be the Corbin.
I think I will. So it's going to be, I'm going to shoot a little wide, because I can't really pinpoint it, but I think that Pirates have an opportunity with the next set coming out of taking off. I think they're really on the cusp. There's a lot of good cards. They have a lot of synergy. They're low to the ground. I think they just need a couple more pieces, and they're very close to becoming a tier one deck. Who knows? It could take until energy rotates. That's a strong possibility. So I still don't think, you know, if these cards don't take off in this next set, that you just have to wait till the energy menace is out, and Pirates will probably be a tier one deck when rotation happens. So it could be a longer play than that, but in the meantime, I think you may have an opportunity in this, with this next set coming out. But we have, I'm going to go with three of them. It will be Fathom, Fleet Captain, Ruin Raider, and Captain Lanny Storm. I think Ruin Raider has, just because it has the draw card and you're an attacking deck, this is basically the card advantage that you need to keep the deck going. It gives you the steam. Fathom Fleet Captain, it's pretty oppressive. It comes down on two, and it could gum up the board. So I think it helps with the aggressive deck, and it gives it a little more board presence without having to be susceptible to board wipe. And then the Captain Lanny Storm, I've seen this with a few treasure decks, and he's always, I've seen him play.
I think she's a she.
Oh, it's a she. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, Captain Storm
I believe so. They have a lot of kick-ass lady pirates in this set. I think that's cool.
I should look at this bigger. Oh, yeah, I can see it now. I apologize.
Now, I want your opinion, Marcel, because we were called a bunch of morons who don't know anything about Magic, and we're totally unqualified to give a set review because DJ and I said Rowdy Crew was not a good card.
Oh, that card sucks. Oh my god. So right now I'm gonna start a stream. It's gonna come up tomorrow. It's called Janky Dirtle. Essentially, it's gonna be how to play Magic online for the cheapest possible. I'm gonna get all the bulk cards and try to build decks with these bulk cards and incrementally build to my collection as I win. I'll add a ticket if I win a match or three games and such. So I'm going to slowly build my card pool that way, but that's going to keep my card pool to really cheap cards. So I'm trying to find all these cool cards to make these decks that are pretty cheap. And there's some interesting stuff out there. And I looked at that card once, and I didn't give it a second thought. That card sucks donkey balls.
Are you going to come to town riding on a pony?
How'd you know? It's going to be a worm. Sandworm Convergence. I just got to say, that card is...
That's a Janky Dirtle Dandy.
Oh, my God. Right. I got a that deck. Sounds like fun. I got a deck.
Yeah. All my creatures got horsemanship. All right. So, turns out Rowdy Crew is a bulk rare for a reason. Who knew? Why don't you break that Janky Dirtle, and then DJ and I will look really stupid for saying it was a bad card.
I'll do that. I will look in... Once I get the opportunity to buy some cards, that'll be one of the first few cards I buy, and I'll figure out a way to make it into something when I get there. So I'll do that for you, Jason. You will get a deck. And I think I won't do that until after the new cards are released, because I just don't think I could do it with the current batch in standard right now.
Marcel, why don't you tell us when episode 200 is going to be ready?
It will be ready by Christmas.
Will it be ready before episode 300? Because I think you need to start getting to work on that pretty soon.
I feel sad for whoever listens to episode 200 and tries to recreate what we did or what has happened, because it is way too much work for the end product. It's going to be a nice episode. It's going to be funny. It's going to be enjoyable, but the amount of hours that I put into it for what it's going to be I'm never going to do a project like this again. But it's still going to be fantastic. That's all I have to say.
Well, we were willing to let somebody else do it and half-ass it, and you're like, no, this is going to be a Marcel Mint episode. And we're like, all right, man, you're a perfectionist.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's been like the best way I could describe it is like, you know, say you're lactose intolerant and you eat some cheese, and then you're just backed up, and then you finally let loose of that big nasty shit. Like, you know, this episode 200 has had me back.
Sponsor a Squatty Potty.
Yeah, Squatty Potty for 5 low payments of $16.99. All right. But creatively, like, I've been backed up because of episode 200. It's been like I've been procrastinating on it for almost 2 years now. So, you know, getting it completed is allowing me to now start doing other projects that I've been putting on hold because I need to get this done. So I'm ready for it to be out there. It's good. It may be a little bit longer than I would hope for, Should be about a little bit over 2 hours, but...
So, like a backed up lactose dump, you're ready for it to be out.
Oh, man. But it's going to be fantastic. It's going to be a laugh.
Only fest. 2 hours? Man, I think people would listen to a 3 hour episode too under extravaganza.
Yeah. Well, we got 14 hours of clips and had to whittle it down. And I think it was like about two, it's going to be like 2:15, I think.
Is there like a folder with all the clips?
On my computer, but I'm not going to share it.
That would be cool to give access to our patrons who.
Well, what's going to happen?
Give us money at patreon.com/brainstormbrewery. They can access the folder. No.
No. Okay. Well, what's going to happen is we can have maybe some kind of we'll figure out some kind of something, and we could release back episodes in after hours of these clips. Because I could literally do an entire episode on Marcellisms, and you know,
that'd be cool.
Yeah, so like there's enough clips for a lot of shit that just didn't make it. There's like excellent clips that I rated very high.
Brian sleeping, Corbin shilling, Jason drinking, Marcelling.
Yeah, there's a lot. There's some good stuff. So there's 14 hours. I got it down to an hour and 45 of clips out of 14 hours. So the rest of the stuff's on the cutting room floor. So we can start piecing those together in a little half hour, after hours. If you can figure out something for the Patreons or, you know. We could do something sporadic, but I'm going to need at least like 6 months after this gets done before I even think about that. But you know.
Well, 6 months after this gets done, we're going to be on episode 300.
Yeah, I can't wait to see that. Congrats to your editor; those are going to be some big shoes to fill.
I think we might hire a episode 300 editor.
All right. Let's get out of here before there's free promotions for people that don't deserve it.
Don't buy a squatty potty yet. Bye! They haven't given us any money or potties. Well, they're not potties, they're stools, but they haven't given us anything, so...
Trust me, if...
Get ready to buy one, but don't buy one yet.
If they were to sponsor this cast, it would not be as funny as it is now.